Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, January 30th, 2016. Amazing how time is flying. Welcome to Zambia Block Talk Radio on Perspectives. My good friend Roger Charlene Okotox, Canada, just did a wonderful job leading us through and walking us some steps. Important discussion there about the role of embassies, how they operate. They need to be up to date and everything that goes with it. I'm picking a subject today. We're going to be looking at what is Zambia's economic policy. The reason I'm doing that is because there is always in the political or election cycle when America and Zambia, the United States, seem to share the same election year, and it's happening again this year, 2016. It is interesting because when you're listening to the campaigns going on, the issues that the candidates discuss in America and what they discuss back home, there's one thing that I have observed, and everybody that has called in, everybody listening to us online from whichever part of the world, welcome. The policies do not come out very clear. It's just a matter of outshouting, making your other candidate or your opponent look bad and how they have done a bad job, and for you to sort of say you are going to do a better job than they are. So we are going to try to examine and look at Zambia's, we'll try to examine Zambia's economic policy and whether the two political parties that have been in government, UNIP, MMD and PF, have really presented any difference in economic policies and their management style. Then we shall look at the manifestos of the political parties in Zambia and whether the things that they present, Roger, like Elizabeth, everybody that has called in, is there really a difference in the way they do things? Or they simply take over state house and perform government and they continue operating and it goes on business as usual. My name is Nathan Nkama. I'm hosting you from Dallas, Texas, and I have a panel of people here that are going to help me with this. Let me welcome my good friend, my brother, from the District of Columbia, popularly known as D.C. Dr. Sonso, good morning.
Good morning, Evan, and Masuke, I'm in Texas.
Yeah, I'm quite not Kabalika Kuno. Elizabeth, thanks for coming back and for joining us again.
Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. I know you are trying to put it on mute to avoid noise from your background. Roger, once again, welcome back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you, Nathan.
And Abachisebo here. We call him Bayama Abachisebo. Welcome.
Yeah, Mama Shukeni, thank you, Natotela.
And I think 267 is our brother and friend Musabwe, if I'm not mistaken. Am I right? Good morning. Okay, 0175. Good morning. All right. I'll begin the discussion. And the first question I want to throw here is, first of all, we need to understand, because this is normally what we do. We start talking about something, Roger, and we start running with it, assuming that everybody understands what we are talking about or what it is. Dr. Kasonso, I want you to help us here. When we say economic policy, what are we talking about? What is this? What breed of a dog is this thing called the economic policy?
A policy is a prescription. It's a prescription of a program. You know, it's kind of steps of actions that will be taken and the results that are expected. In relation to the economy, we have to relate policy to economic theory. Economic theory is a particular idea or principle that aims to describe how the economy works. And generally, there are two broad categories in which economic theories can be grouped. There is the supply-side economic theories and the demand-side economic theories. The supply side of the economy is that part of the economy, the country's economy, that involves producing goods and services and supplying them to customers. And whereas the demand side is that part of the economy relating to demand, that is the amount of goods and services that customers want to buy or use. Economic growth is sustained when there's equilibrium in both supply and demand side of the economy. For that reason, most contemporary economists will agree that it's necessary to have policies that are informed by appropriate economic theory in order to predict economic outcomes for any prospective political action. So when we talk about economic policy, really what we're talking about a principle, a set of action that the government intends to implement in order to generate economic development for their people. And I must say that one of the homeworks that I did to do this is to look at the political platforms of the major political parties in Zambia. Having examined the platforms of the major parties in Zambia, other than Grama, I found no major differences in their wish lists and suggested economic programs. Their documents mainly go sector by sector, prescribing what they intend to do if elected in government. I also found no consistent or clear nation of the mechanics by which the country will create, use, or retain wealth in Zambia. And one deficiency that really baffled me in these documents was a lack of perspective or conversation, or even in some cases, even, you know, just not talking about the structure of the Zambian economy in the context of the global economy. How does the economy of Zambia work? What causes Zambia to tick and not to tick? So that conversation is not addressed on both documents. They're just kind of like wish lists. And I felt that the issue of the nation's economic structure is neither understood nor clearly incorporated in an economic program. The prospective course of action, therefore, lack a critical measurable success criteria. The economy of Zambia mainly creates wealth from copper production and export. However, since most of the copper industries are now firmly foreign hands, most of the earnings from copper are externalized and do not find their way into the economy. So from the supply side of the economy, Zambia is a slave economy that works for other countries. Additionally, with the advent of economic liberalization, Zambia is also a prominent consumer market in the sub-region. We consume foodstuffs in ShopRite and other stores that we don't make. We drive cars from abroad, and we buy spare parts also from abroad and many other consumer products. So from the demand side of the economy, our earnings are spent on consumer goods, and therefore they find their way out of the country. The implication of this economic structure is that if the issue of national economic slavery is not addressed, first, economic programs, economic policies will not deliver long-term benefits or deliver sustained economic development.
Wow. Okay, right there. Just stop right there. I like that. Roger, there's one statement that Dr. Kasonso has made in the economic policy. It says government, it talks about how government intends to implement things. let's go historical here. I always like to do this. Of course, you and I saw a very clear distinction between the way KK ran things and the way Chilo ran things. Just in your own way, or whatever way you want to approach this, what significant differences did we see between the MMD coming into power and and the way KK ran things?
Well, the contrast was huge, as you said. From the UNIP era, we saw heavy-handedness in government running the economy, from cooking, where you buy cooking oil, to where you're buying sugar. That was determined by government. The price which you paid for soap, the price which you paid for mealmeal was determined by government. In contrast to the MMD, they brought in a resemblance of a market economy, where now buses were in the hands of the Zambian Zambian people. What hasn't changed to this day, in my view, this may not may be economic or maybe political. It is the heavy handedness of the involvement of government in business, meaning the if I have to do, say, for instance, business with Zesco, I have to be in good terms with government. If I have to do business with the mines, somehow the government, there is a way they can stop me. And that, in my view, is has also not freed up the nation, so to say, to direct us into economic freedom, which Makasonso is talking about here, economic slavery. In the previous mm-hmm. segment, or was it last week, we were talking about our dependence on copper. Again, this tells us, as a, probably as a nation or even as a people, how much our economy has not diversified. So to some extent, yes, we have moved to a degree of market economy, but again, the heavy-handedness of government, three-quarters of business in Zambia is done by government, and that is a problem. We'll talk about it as we go.
Yeah. Before I bring in Kelvin and others and Elizabeth here, Dr. Kasonso, I just want you to address this point Rogers raised. He says the MMD brought in something that resembled a market economy. Isn't Zambia a market economy?
Yes, it's a market economy, but predominantly it's a consumer market economy. In other words, most of what in Zambia is just to consume. So we work for the money in Zambia, and we spend it on products. That money we pay ends up outside of the country. So the country doesn't retain any economic substance to build on. And then my colleague has mentioned something very important that we should also look at. The heavy-handed of government, I do believe that government must be able to play a role in the economy. And it is not a terrible thing to have government participate. But what is their participation in the economy? Is it just to create opportunities or to hinder opportunities? And, you know, I feel like the governments that we have in our country don't have the capacity to influence the, you know, economic policies within the country progressively. You know, it's like, you know, the government works for other people outside of the country than the people in the country.
Interesting. Kelvin, I'm
just add on to what Makasonso said. When we talk about the heavy-handedness, let's look at about the money which is coming from a Northwestern province and from the mines. How much of that money, like Makasonso is saying, is going to productive means, or how much money is going to consumption, so to say? Because of heavy-handedness of our government, we are spending a lot of money into consuming only. If we let go the free market economy work, we have a smaller government. If a minister can only have one vehicle, can only have one cell phone, the other two cell phones should be paid for by himself. Or we should have, you know, all this waste we have in Lusaka, and let that money be invested into what is going on in Karamo, into fisheries in Kawambwa. We are going to see a change. So yes, consumerism, especially by our own government, which the money which does not go into production, Nathan, does not go into production, is killing us. It's killing us. It's killing us. So it's killing us. That's what I can say. Go ahead.
It is killing us. Kelvin, the terminology Makasonso is using, consumer market economy. In a nation where there is minimal manufacturing going on, production of goods going on, what is the danger that our country has faced in its 50 years?
Well, I mean, Dr. Kasson, so I said, and this is something we tend to run away from because we're not a net producing country, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We're definitely going to consume, and where does that come from? We have to import, okay? But I think, again, what Roger has talked about is, look, if we can generate all this money and put it into productive use, let's create our own industry, okay? Let's develop, within the borders of Zambia. What we'll be able to produce, we can consume as well as export. But if we just depend on consumption, we're going to be losing that hardened foreign exchange to importing goods from outside. That's what we need to do. But the issue I wanted to address was there's no political party in Zambia that has a different economic perspective. Okay? All what they talk about is, okay, the inside of the shirt is black. We're going to wear the outside, which is white, in terms of the economy. There's no difference. What HH wants to bring about, there's no difference. You see, we had an opportunity in 1991 to rewrite what Zambians wanted to do, okay? But we failed miserably at that, okay? We, quite frankly, we opened up ourselves through the privatization, the structure adjustment programs, we opened up ourselves too fast to these international vultures. Okay, we needed a situation where government does not relieve its duty to play an important part in the economy by owning shares in productive industries, selling the mines completely, retaining a minority share. That was wrong. Selling all the other industries that Kaunda created, that was wrong. We needed government. For an economy like Zambia, we need government to play a hand, okay? Otherwise, once they just, liberalize full out, we're in deep trouble, period.
It's very, Elizabeth, you are leading an organization which is trying to help Africa trade or do business with America, which is it has always been a very difficult mountain to surmount. Very few people have managed to get to the peak. How do we address, or how do we try to correct some of these things we are talking about in the Zambian perspective?
Thank you very much, Pastor Nkama. To the listening audience, well, what are we doing with the initiative, the business initiative we are coming up with, which is the Africa Global Supercent? Actually addressing points like the points the speaker has just finished speaking about, the previous speaker. What are the challenges that Africa have vis-a-vis Zambia. And if we could start with Zambia and turn the tables around, then other African nations maybe can learn and get an example from there and say, well, if Zambia is doing it, we can do it. Zambia has had a challenge with exporting, especially into the global market. Well, they do very well with Europe. I think they've penetrated some markets in China, India, and the like. They have completely, they've been struggling to penetrate the U.S. market. Not only Zambia, a lot of African countries haven't. AGOA has been there, but now they are looking at it as another white elephant, and that happens very quickly with Africans. They fail to attend something, they look at it as a failure, a white elephant, let's move on. You can, when you talk to the business community in Zambia, that is the feeling that is there. Though AGOA is being promoted and people are talking about it as a trade route, a policy that was set up by the U.S. government in 2000 by Clinton, and an act that is more like NAFTA. If NAFTA has done it, why is AGOA failing in Africa? Where are we going wrong as a continent? We're very good at pointing fingers at other people failing us or milking us, but what are we not doing that the Spanish are doing? What are we not doing that these other trade policies that the U.S. is putting in place for Asia, Europe, and other countries, how come they are working but failing in Africa despite all the efforts they are putting in place? One thing that I can look at is, for instance, our business. What are we trying to do? We are merely starting, but our goal is to open distribution centers in Africa and in the U.S. Why are we doing that? We are not manufacturers, but for easy understanding, we can operate more or less like a Walmart. We are buying from manufacturers, and we are selling. We are finding markets for them and selling for them. So that if U.S. businesses are saying, we don't understand the African market, it's so complicated, we'd rather export to Europe or China or wherever, or Asia, we will say, look, we understand the African market. We will get those products to Africa for you. You know, so we are doing it in two ways. One is on the website. One is by brick and mortar buildings. We just found a warehouse in Reading, which we are now negotiating with realtors to see if we can purchase the first warehouse. That's one big project we're working on. It's doable, and we're very excited about it, and I think we might close the deal on it, which will be a good start.
Okay.
Now, in Africa, what are we doing? We are planning for this conference coming up. We are pushing it to December because of this initiative of the warehouse. We want it to purchase before the conference. So if in Africa we launch the, we're not just going there to talk and say, oh, this is how you do business. We are going there and telling them, hey, look, we have this opportunity. Are you ready? We have a market. We have a warehouse. We have experts. Like experts in logistics, experts in all these fields, who are ready to help us get these things right away into the market, the U.S. market. Don't come for a workshop to America or a conference and carry your katundu like you're going to a market in Africa. That's what most Africans will do. When you're coming here, that's not the way you do business. You have to understand how business operates here for you to break into the market. We are here as an opportunity. How do you work with us? So what we should be looking at, for if we are going to help, for instance, Zambia start exporting and getting their money in, the dollar into Zambia, is setting up structures like what we are talking about. One, for instance, the farmers in Zambia, let me just wind up. For instance, farmers grow a lot of produce. What does ShopRite do? And all these big shops that have come in from South Africa, they import fruits, vegetables, even onions, everything comes from the South African farmer. The Zambian farmer cannot sell. Their products are rotting if they're not at the road trying to sell to the vehicles passing on the way. So what we should do is, if they can produce most of those things, and maybe peanuts, export them, bring them over here, package them as products of Zambia, ship them as groundnuts or peanuts, whatever you call them, dried beans, whether it's kablangeti or it's serenge or it's always whatever you call it, package those things, even fresh fruits when we get to eat with fresh produce, get them here in containers the way cocoa is brought in from Ghana. Bring the products here and package them at the plant, the same plant we are working to buy. It's a very big plant. It has warehousing, it has everything, it has a railroad right next to it. It has about 8-9 decks where the containers can deck in or float And so it's big, it's huge, it's three stories. It has, I don't know how many offices. I can't believe we're being given at the price we're giving it. So I'm just giving in a nutshell some things that we can do to help trigger manufacturing in Zambia for the Zambians to be motivated that they will have a market to sell their product to. Sorry.
That's good.
I haven't spoken too much.
No, that's okay. That's good. That's good because here is what I'm trying to do with this discussion. This is an election year campaign, and I said in my opening remarks, Dr. Kalonde, I'm coming to you, that Zambia and America, in every cycle, we do share a same election year. My question is, and I threw this question to Dr. Kasonso in my preparation of this discussion, Dr. Kalonde, I want you to argue and give me, make me understand. I don't know the names of supermarkets that you know. I'll mention those I remember and those I know. What is it that ShopRite is doing, which Melissa Supermarket is not doing, which Bagul Supermarket in Mazabuka is not doing? You can tell me the others in Indola, Kitwe, which I may not be familiar with. What is it ShopRite is doing, which any other store in Zambia is not owned by Zambians is not doing?
Capital investment. Capital investment is not there on the Zambian side, and at the same time, you are talking about a supermarket that is individually owned and is not even publicly traded. So you expect it not to have cash flow like ShopRite has, and then you look at the business management. Business management also is somehow a problem. So you find definitely ShopRite performing better because of one, what also our government did to ShopRite. They gave them concessions and they traded for how many years without paying taxes. That also affected its reinvestment policy. Then you can mention those supermarkets that you have mentioned. There are a lot of things that governments in Zambia made a mistake on, and that affected the Zambian businesses. Moreover, the bringing of those businesses in the country also definitely affected how companies perform. Look at the Funcos. Funcos, Vitaform, those companies disappeared because we allowed cheap things that were being made in South Africa and at the same time gave them all these concessions to come and stay in Zambia. Meanwhile, we kept our own companies to suffer. Although MMD did some few things right, on that part, Frederick really went wrong and did not really read what was on the wall that this is going to kill our own businesses. That's what I think has happened to my country.
Let me throw this at you. I'll still want to stay with you, Rakalonde. I'll go back to Roger, Rakasonso, Kelvin, and everybody who has called in here, and Priscilla. You have talked about management, and this is what bothers me, Rakalamba. This is what bothers me. The general manager, you've talked about business management. Is it the culture the company brings with it, that, or the policies it has in its management style, or it's the people? The reason I'm saying that is that the people managing ShopRite right now, most of them are, the general manager is Zambian, by the way. I know him personally. So what is the problem? Where is the difference, Bakalonde?
Every business has its own culture, and at the same time, if you look at those other small businesses owned by family members, they don't look at somebody's qualification to manage their businesses, most of them. They look at family ties. And when you look at the American business, if you look, go back some few years, when this this degree, Masters in Business Administration, MBA, when it came out,
MBA seems to have overtaken the economics qualification of studies. I don't know why. Anyway, that's beside the point. Go ahead.
So there was
infusion of young men with intelligent minds to help manage small businesses and the other big corporations. And that helped in terms of how we manage our businesses here. Now, if you look at the model in South Africa also, they looked at people who have some qualifications for them to manage businesses. You can go back to ZCBC or OK Bazaar or NIEC, Moisen Stores. There was a tradition of having a grade 7 or from 5 just because uncle is MCC. And what happens, they were getting into that. So we kept that tradition even when MMD came into power. Hence, that culture of not really minding the job you are doing and how to make it profitable continued and probably continues up to now in some minds. That's where the problem is.
Same question to you, Dr. Kasson. So what is Shoprite doing that Bagu Supermarket in Mazabuga is not doing, Melissa is not doing?
First, let me comment on what our sister mentioned about the foreign direct investment using consumer products, where we take products from Zambia to other parts of the world. That is something that non-Shoprite enterprises could try to do if they can find markets in other countries as well, like an effort that they're making here in the United States to try and bring some products from Zambia to the United States external market. I also wanted to comment on an MBA. An MBA is a very good qualification. It's a business manager's qualification, but we must recognize something. It has very little to do with public policy. And what Brother Fred, the group did when they gained government, a lot of policy positions went into the hands of MBAs and stuff like that. So I don't know why they did that. And concerning what Dr. Kalonde had said about Brother Fred's policy implementations, I have reviewed the structure adjustment program and the way it was done. It book applied without internal research or empirically testing IMF assumptions. What they needed to do was to assess what can work and what can't work empirically before implementation, but they ended up implementing just a document that they were without testing it. And the implementation itself was the test, and it was a costly test. It lost companies, lost jobs, lost technical competencies, and lost economic opportunities for expansion of those that ended up doing. And so what is really lacking on the ground? It's really a serious lack of governing wisdom. You know, you don't just, like somebody said on this platform, you don't just liberalize the economy and it's like a miracle that, you know, that brings economic development. No, you have to know what makes a country wealthy, what improves the economy. And you see, you have to earn from your energy, from your efforts, you have to keep more money of what you earn. That is how you grow life. Keep more of what we earn. But what we earn is not kept in Zambia. Anybody who constructive thing to do, they are on a bus to South Africa. They are taking the money they work for to another country. So it's a structural problem that hasn't been addressed in Zambia.
Okay. Titus, you want to come in?
I just wanted to comment on, I think we should be able to bring people, I heard you, Nathan, referring to the Bagu's supermarket.
Yeah.
Because Bagu's tried to resist the competition of Shoprite and ended up making what he called hyper supermarket, which was competitive for a couple of years. But as of today, he has ended up leasing that to Spar. It is another probably South African competitor to Spar. So it would be important to analyze, because Bagu's is an Indian that you know who knows business, but it's very important to get the nitty-gritties of what exactly would make him fail in terms of competing with ShopRite continuously as Hyper and switch around, I still give him an advantage that Spar is also is a thing that he owns. So Spar is renting from Bagus. I don't know whether he end up selling or not. Yes.
Yeah.
So Spar is renting from Bagus.
Yes, so I heard about that
Spar.
Story.
Yeah.
Yeah, I heard about that story of Bagus resisting what you're... I think it goes to the issues, Dr. Kalon, the rest of capital investment, business management. Of course, the way family business is run and operated is different from the way a private-only, a public-operated company will operate, the policies and the principles and all those things. I want us to get to the bottom of, number one, this being an election year, before I bring in Roger, this being an election year, and Kelvin, what really drives us to vote for RB, Manawasa, King Cobra, EL, or now we have HH and basically those are the major companies. This is about two people anyway, we all know that. Now we have HH and Edgar Lungu. I want us to conclude with that. Let's bear that in mind. If we are saying we are going PF, from the economic policy point of view, what are we saying? If we are saying we are going HH, and I'm looking at the political parties' policy, economic policies right here in front of me, like Iwakasonso said, you refer to it yourself, Kelvin, that these are things that are just on paper. Why are we going to vote the way we are going to vote? Okay, let me go to Roger. Roger, your comment.
Okay. I'm in a different world. I'm asking myself a question, not to override or overrule your question. But the question Bakasonso brought on the chair: how do we move from a slave? I think he's using a term,
slave economy,
to a productive based country. I think we shouldn't miss that one, Nathan, as we move, because that will be key in answering and therefore coming to the main question, EL, should we vote for Lungu or should we vote for HH? Or should we vote for Babanda? I think these are just two individuals or three individuals or four individuals. We are going to vote for them, in my view, based on their names. Nothing mm-hmm. different they have put on the table. We want to make a demand to someone who is going to come and give us some hard facts. For instance, Zambia is among the ten hungriest, where you find the people who are very hungry. Zambia was indicated as number one, as number 10 on that list. Chad is on there. Countries like Eritrea on that list, Zambia is there. And the reason is that because we have 10% of our people, is it 13% of our people who are well, those who are in Lusaka and line of copper belt. But 57% of our people are left behind, those who are in rural Zambia. If Zambia was mm-hmm. to move to a productive-based economy, we are going to demand that the people in Chama, their mangoes, they contribute more, because by Elizabeth, we is going to need more than 10 bags coming from Lusaka. She's going to need a lot of things. So, in this election season, to your question, Nathan, I think we haven't heard any difference from these parties. But we want to ask them to give us a direction. What is going to be different between EL now? Other than looking to roads, yes, roads are important, that we have built roads, yes, they're important. But economic-wise, how are we going to make sure we build an economy which benefits the people in Mufumbwe, which benefits the people in Amwala, which benefits everyone? How are we going to do that? Other than the Lusaka-based economy.
Okay. Excellent point. Excellent point. I'm going to go through everyone here, and this is my argument. Okay, this is my argument. This is my argument. Whether it's HH or Edgar Lungu, Lakasonso, in an economy, number one, whose budget is, these are not accurate figures, I'm just throwing them out there, whose budget is 60, 70, 80%, depending on whichever is applicable, is funded by the donors, whose economy of the major industries employing majority of the population is foreign-owned, what influence really does the president of Zambia have?
Yes, that's a very good question. The first thing that we should look at is a job description. The president of Zambia. The president of Zambia. What kind of a president is he? What kind of people is he going to be president for? What amount of economic resources is he going to have authority over? I call it one of the saddest jobs, because you are literally Infumu Yabapina, you are the king of the public. And as a result, it's a very, very heartbreaking job. Especially if you don't even have an idea of how to address the economic structure. The slave economic issue is a problem. What needs to be done in the Republic of Zambia is gradually moving towards retail politics. In retail politics, a person can be able to propose some certain policy prescriptions that will help the country based on research and good thinking. We saw some of retail politics from Bachilubana Bachilufia. They could go to the masses of poor people and explain that they want to bring a better road or build some more schools in the neighborhood and stuff like that. Those were helpful politics. Public policy, however, in the hands of a Zambian president, is not a very powerful weapon to change and drive the economy. The policies of the country must fundamentally change. The laws of the country must be revised. I am an advocate for a concept that comes from a book called retained earnings. Retained earnings means that just that you keep more of what you earn. So if Zambia is able, in some small ways, incrementally, able to return more of its own money to its own people, then we can see sustainable growth and economic development. But as long as the dollar or the kwacha or the GDP is end and immediately externalized, there is no hope, regardless of which political party we can put in that position or in that.
Yeah, well put, well put, my brother. Thank you. I'm going to come through everybody to say something. Kelvin, you want to respond to the statement I'm making? What difference will it make whichever president we elect?
You see, and I think we talked about it. I don't think it will make any significant difference. There are so many factors that affect how our country, aspires to develop economically, politically, and socially. There are so many things involved here. But in terms of going forward as a country, I think there's a
We can't hear you. Oh, did he drop?
Yeah, he dropped.
I think he dropped. Let me go to Titus. Titus, you've heard my comment and my question. What difference does it make which president we elect or party we put in place? I want us to be thinking in terms of economic policy. Go ahead,
okay.
Titus.
I think from my direction, the two top candidates represent can explain more to the question that you have. Basically, I think EL's capabilities are mostly service as a lawyer. you are doing more of service. For HH, you are doing more of production. And you can go back 10, 15 years of their history and you can find the history of somebody. If you're a lawyer, you're doing a service-oriented business, which you could be good at. And the other, HH's history is production of where you check whether it's Zambia or whatever.
When,
there's a few of service.
Remember, Titus, we're having an economic discussion here. When you say production, what do you mean? Others will understand you differently based on their qualifications here.
Okay. What I mean by production, you can know that for you to get to a point where you're rearing 90,000 or so plus cows, it doesn't need only paperwork service to prove that. If you check the logistics of Zambeef and all those things, because some people might take him wrongly to say, oh, he sold his mines and whatever, which gets in a category of service. If I may explain myself that way. There's two folds of one person which tangled into service-oriented things and also productive things. What I mean is like, for example, if I put you to run FRA, which is Food Reserve Agents, anybody can run that, but which platform are you dealing with? If it's a person who just does service, you can do good on policies. But to do fault finding of why maize goes to rot and stuff like that, you cannot only service effectively from a service point of view. You have to be boots on the ground and doing that in order to tell another person what they should do the other side while you're doing the other side. It's not a paper thing
that
where you can
fax Livingstone.
And when you fax Livingstone, you're telling somebody to do something that is on paper.
Okay.
Because they might have a suit to do boots on the ground.
Okay, that's good. You very good point, okay? I think 681 is Dr. Kalonde. Dr. Kalonde? Okay, I thought that was that. Before I go to Florida, I'll let Kelvin finish his point. Kelvin, you dropped. Come back and finish what you were saying.
Yeah, so like I was saying, I don't think there will be any fundamental difference. The issue that we have to factor in Zambian politics, and which people, you know, don't really look at, is the likability factor of the presidential candidate. That factor to me plays a very, very important role. I want to look at it in terms of Rupiah Banda versus Michael Sata. At that point, the Zambians, other than indicting the MMD for their 20-year misrule, there was more likability for Michael Sata. Michael Sata had a message that resonated with the people. I think all it takes in Zambia is being able to spread a message that the majority of the people will want to hear. You will be
Sata was a grassroots politician. He spoke the language of the people, right?
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, let's go to Florida. Brother Alan,
can I come in 681, please? Did I miss my turn? 681?
Oh, I heard your name. Is that Dr. Kalonde?
No, that's Rassam. Rassam from Seattle.
Oh, yes, I called I said 681. Good morning. Please go ahead. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think I'm enjoying the discussion. There are a lot of points that have come here. Come up, brother. And my contribution will be from the last speaker. He spoke about the message. And I know it's the message that controls the minds. The previous speaker also spoke about three blocks of our thought process, the economical, the political, and the social. Now, what I'll say is that when our politicians come in, I think they forget what we are dealing with here. Like the late Michael Sata, he knew our social economic structure, and he spoke to that. Because he spoke to that, people followed him. And
money
the other thing that we need, people followed him. And the other thing that we need to think about also is that we have structures which maybe, I mean, let me be honest, American democracy cannot work in Zambia. No, it cannot.
So I agree with
because
you.
Because we have a background of a feudal system. We have Infumu, the headband, and everybody coming down. How does the message resonate with somebody, a message of democracy, resonate with somebody who is in that social, you know, structure? So much that even the economic message that will come, if it doesn't follow into that, we'll have problems. We can look at the UK right now. Their economy, their pound has been strong. Why? Maybe some of us could argue or other people could argue, but they have stuck to that imperial system, if I call it. The Queen is still there, and people still believe in that. So within the structure of that social structure, they have brought the economic policies that can fit in that. But in Zambia, it's like it's everybody's game. We come in with this one, we talk, shall we sell the mines? Everything that Kaunda had done is undone and thrown away, like they say, you know, the baby with the bathwater, and then we have start all over, and then somebody comes. So maybe what remains between these two brothers is to see how do I merge the two. And I like the production, the service part of it. That is very critical that we need to see. But even then, what is the social structure that we're dealing in? How can we get an economic policy to fit into the social structure? Because in the final analysis, it's people that are going to either benefit or lose their franchise. Thank you.
Excellent. That's our son, right?
Yes, please.
Yeah, that's what I'm in Seattle. Yeah, we have about 8 minutes here. I'll allow Brother Alan to comment, and then I'll go back to Brother Sonso and Sam to comment. There's a question. Okay, I'm getting a feedback here. There's a question that I want us to conclude with. If we don't finish today, we'll continue. If I don't get Miles Sampa to come next week, I'll come up with another topic, then we can conclude this in a nice way. But, Brother Alan, please go ahead.
I think it's not. Yeah, this is Mr. Colomba.
Not Alan. 813.
Yes, Mr. Colomba from Beverly Hills, Florida.
Okay, yeah. Bakalumba, sorry. As when we see Florida, we are used to Alan.
No, always
please go ahead. Please go. Yeah, I know. Please go ahead with your comment.
I've been listening to you guys. My just one thing or question before I comment anything. Being an American citizen, and also a Zambian, which I know that they have. Now introduced dual citizenship. I just would like to, if any of you guys may just update me on the advantages as far as business, or as far as contribution in politics, or what would it benefit me to get a Zambian passport because I surrendered that passport. What is the benefit of me getting that passport again as far as contributing to the economy and also not only that, even in politics? What is it that's set up for that?
Okay, fair question. And I don't know. Let me do this.
Let me invite Brad.
Yeah.
I don't know you. What is his name again?
Kalumba.
Brother Kalumba, join us next week. We are talking about the diaspora contribution to our nation in view of the dual citizenship clause. We are going to compare what other countries are doing, Costa Rica, Israel, how they are working with their diaspora. Maybe your question will be properly addressed. It is a huge, huge question. But in five minutes, it is a huge question.
And thank you for participating, Brother Kalumba. Please join us, like Roger said. We are concluding here. What is Zambia's economic policy? Our conclusion, Brother Sonso, 2 minutes, and then I'll go to Brother Sam as well to finalize. So therefore, why are we changing politics? Why do we really change political leaders in Zambia, like us, so from an economic point of view?
Economic policy in the Zambia
usually not a major factor for who becomes president. Although it be critical, our society has not yet reached a level where we can decide on who should be president based on how promising their economic ideas are, because in Zambia, it's very easy to copy another person's idea. That's why if you read the manifesto, they sound like an echo of each other, you know. So there is nothing that we can go to. But as an emerging economy, this is a very important area that we need to look at. We need to also help our leaders to implement economic policies that are going to help the country. If the two contestants or the main contestant to the president wants to win, they should not forget this. The majority of the Zambians don't have education. The majority of the Zambians are living on less than $1 a day. So you have to be able to craft a message that speaks to the people at that level, because in Zambia, those are the kingmakers, university professors, the big businessmen and all those kind of people. You can have an entourage of eminent sons of Zambians. Those are not who make a president, but Wakaponya, Banamaliketi, and other people that are on the lower strata, because that's the majority of the country. Those are the kingmakers. So if a person comes up with a program that assists in some way, I believe in change of government, each government that comes on at least brings on some policies, some practices, something that can help the country develop. I don't believe in keeping one government. You know, for example, they told us recently that Balungu tabako ite vision ni, but balakonke nafi program ya basata. Ele tuwa website program ya basata nisha mfuapu nangu YouTube nangu imwe balo ndola watu wa program ya basata. Imbukuweke chapuka video tape ka basata. So that is where I see the running of the economy. And if Hakainde is trying to go anywhere, he has to have more than one region interested in his government or prospective government. That's what I would say. Otherwise, the economy of Zambia doesn't stand to benefit or go forward or backwards from any of the programs that suggested, because the issue of the economic structure has been addressed.
It's true. Okay, Brother Sam. And everybody, before Sam speaks, as we conclude, if in this election and campaign season, if you have any topic you want us to discuss, please feel free to get in touch with Roger or myself. We are both on Facebook, Nathan Nkama, you can find me, or Roger Chari, you can find both of us on Facebook. Just let us know. Let's talk about this later. Sam, please conclude. You'll hit my question.
Thank you. I think the problem that we have right now is that, like the previous speaker said, the manifestos are manifestos. They all look the same. I love the TF manifesto. When I read through it, I thought it had the substance. But again, there's a dissonance between economics and social status.
Yeah.
How do we do this? We are here. We're trying to compare what we do here to what we do in Zambia. Two different, you know, apples and oranges. That's what we're trying to do. But unless we understand the social structure in Zambia and speak to that, then we can start building a viable economy based on that, not based on the United States, not based on, you know, the English, not based on anything. Yes, we can learn from them, but we have to understand the social structure. And me and Varuja have been talking that unless we move from Lusaka, the economy ceases to be Lusaka-based. It moves to rural areas, and it starts growing from there towards Lusaka. That's when we can see some viable change. And unless a politician comes who's going to touch these areas, Lusaka in itself cannot win an election at all. Because what we there is that, and I think Lusaka's reached the marginal returns. No matter how much we bump into Lusaka, what is coming out is marginal. But if we use the same money and to develop rural areas, there'll be more returns than what we have right now. So we have to really understand how does my economic policy operate in a social economy that we have right now?
Excellent. Thank you, Bassam. Great stuff, everybody. I appreciate your time. Here's what I'm going to do, because from your contributions, I've come up with something. If I don't get Mao Sampa next Saturday, I'm working on bringing him on the show to explain his vision and way forward. This is the subject I've come up with, Bassam and everybody.
what were the realities that PF faced? They said they were going to chase the Chinese. What realities did they face? They came. Thank you, everybody, and have a good weekend.
Thank you.